You're listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas.
What a season and what a year it's been for my next guest here on The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. Not only has numbers on the court skyrocketed, but the man just signed a new contract to stay in Olympiacos jersey for two more seasons, where he'll be raising a new daughter born just before Christmas. It will be turned to 29 in just a few days. Right about the probably about the time this episode comes out, my man, Alec Peters, welcome to The Crossover. Dude, what a crazy season, right? Am I right or wrong?
Yeah, thank you for having me, first off.
Thank you for being here.
Yeah, what a year. What a year. It is. It's kind of like it's when it rains, it pours, but in a good way. You know what I mean? Like, you know, coming into the season, obviously, new team, a little bit of a different dynamic with our team, me being able to step into a role that offered me some more opportunity and hopefully been taking advantage of it, and then throw a new baby into the mix mid-year. And, you know, a few wins later, our team has got some momentum. And, you know, I was telling you before, like, this is the best time of the year, and we've all gotten to this point. And, yeah, it's been quite the year. All good things, too.
Man, I'm doing all this research, you know, the day before last night, once we confirmed your time to do this, and I'm like, all right, what do I congratulate on first? You know, obviously it's got to be the little baby girl, right? She was born December 15th, little Christmas gift.
December 15th, greatest day on earth, man. It is. And, you know, leading up to it, it was like, you know, how are you going to deal with it midseason? And other players have obviously done it before, so it wasn't like something totally new for everybody. But for me and my wife, you know, being our first kid, being away from home and having the baby here in Athens, like there was a little bit, you know, half panic, half like, right, you know, anxious, anxiety about the whole thing. And everything turned out great. Most like for me leading up to it was like, you know, how is this going to interrupt my daily routine? Because I'm a big routine guy. Like, you know, from the time I wake up to, you know, when I go to practice, at practice, after practice, like, you know, right, routine is sacred to me. You know, before games, we all have it, right? And I was really worried.
Is it a superstitious routine, or is it just like?
I don't think it's superstitious, because if it gets thrown off, I don't check out, or I don't like mentally go into like a hole somewhere. So if it gets thrown off, it is. But I've definitely had to adjust since having our daughter, adjusted a little bit. You know, some areas I don't compromise, but some areas for sure I've had to adjust. So, but it's been great.
I like the way you use the word adjust. That sounds like something that came right from your wife's mouth, not from yours, actually.
It's just everybody tells you, you're gonna have to adjust. You're gonna have to adjust. It's not gonna be the same thing you always used to do. And I, you know, for a while, I keep telling them, like, no, like, you know, I'm gonna still be the same me. I'm still gonna do the same things I want to do, and make sure I still stay with my routine. But the adjustments have been made, so it's all good.
It's been almost 4 months, and you got a baby girl, right?
Yep, baby girl.
Yes. Yeah, so I mean, that's like double adjustment when it's a female, when it's a young girl, it's a double adjustment. They're so easy though when they're young. So enjoy this moment until they're about 13.
I just every now and then I get a glimpse of the future, because I have two younger sisters, and you know my wife's got a younger sister, so I get a little glimpse into the future, and I'm just like, all right, the time. I see why everybody says right now is the best time, because she is. Exactly. She's just so little, and yeah, she's just there, and she loves everything. So today, right now, I'm just gonna enjoy it.
I got two boys and a girl, and the boys are difficult till about 14. You know, they end up like, you know, getting in trouble, the testosterone, breaking wrists, breaking legs, and the girl's fine until they're like 14, and their girlfriend doesn't invite them over for a sleepover one night, and it's like the world ends, you know. So that's what you got to look forward to.
Yeah, I'm gonna wait. I'm gonna pass on all that. Hopefully, I can punt a lot of that to my wife in the future. So
yeah, be careful when you come off the road trip and it just hands that baby over to you. That's what usually happens. So you see what happens, my man. You start putting up numbers, and not only obviously you sign a new contract. Hopefully those numbers have increased just as much as your numbers on the court have. But you also get to be a guest on my show, The Crossover. How's that?
I don't know what's better, right? Like I can't sitting here right now trying to weigh what's better. I mean, this is an honor. This is an honor, right?
I think the contract might be a little bit better, man, to be honest with you. You know, my son and I, you know Dane, my son is on, mm-hmm. on the sideline yeah. with me. He always goes off on me, man, telling me that I said something to you the day of the game about you taking over Zenkoff or something like that. I was like, no, dude, that was you. I said, that was him, not me. He's like, no, Dad, you opened up your mouth.
Can't tell. 100 people have, you know, you guys aren't the only ones. If it was you, it wasn't you, it was somebody else. It's been a very popular, I guess, comment towards me this whole year. So, you know, yeah, haven't been as much lately, but at the beginning of the year, for sure, it was.
Hey, man, I look at it this way. They cannot be saying that, which is the totally opposite, you know?
Yeah, right, right. And, you know, I'm, you know, super blessed to be able to be in this situation to begin with, you know, even last year, having to play with a guy like Sasha, you know, and just be with him every day, battle with him in practice every day, seeing it all translate on the court for him, you know, maybe right. not so much for me, but for him, it was great. I mean, the season he had last year was unbelievable. And we were, you know, a few seconds away and one missed shot away from it being the perfect season. And the opportunity he has now is totally earned.
We're going to get into the journey here in a minute, but I look at all the stuff that I've been researching, and I followed you since Cheska because I just really loved your game. I thought that you were this complete player that wasn't actually being used enough to do all the things that you could possibly do, like I think we're seeing this year. But, you know, you went to Moscow. Istanbul was, you know, I don't know what happened there, but I know there was a COVID season, so I'm sure it was a difficult time. Then to Baskonia for a couple of years, and now you're in Olympiacos, and it seems like with the 2-year contract, you found a home. What took so long? Because I want to get into your personal journey, yeah. but I also want to know why it took so long, man. You're one of those guys I look at as being like almost the perfect complement to anybody on the team. You know, I mean, you do just about everything. You got the height, you got the rebounding, you know how to pass the ball, you play defense, you're physical. What took so long to get to this new comfort zone?
Yeah, and you know, for a while, maybe I was asking the same question because that first year, I mean, first of all, how lucky was I to be able to walk into EuroLeague and have a job at Cheska and
that question is coming up in a little bit.
So you know, and that just being my first introduction to it all, like winning it that year, playing with the teammates that I had, you know, and then realizing quickly after that, like, okay, you got to go somewhere else. So go to Efes, same kind of story, another great team. You know, you're kind of, I always just kind of felt like I was the guy who everybody loved, like, you know, we like him as a player. He does all the right things, but just don't love him enough to where he's a future, you know, he's a cornerstone of the future. He's a guy that we need to have in the future. He was always just like, hey, you're really good for us this year. And you're
expendable.
Yeah, but you know, we can have somebody else do that and do the same thing. And for a while, that's kind of how it felt until, you know, I got to Vitoria and played for Dusko Ivanovic that first year. He kind of gave me a great opportunity to just be a little free that first year. And he ran a lot of action for me. He gave me some freedom to not only just be a shooter, but to, you know, post up, to use screens, you know, handle the ball a little bit. It just, that year really formed, you know, what I think my future looked like as a player. And I think it was a year that kind of proved to the league itself that, like, hey, he's more than just what he did the first 2 years with Cheska and Efes. You know, he's not just a small piece on a great team. You know, he can be, you know, more of a I don't know, go-to guy or bigger role type of player on a big team. And I think those years in Vitoria was the time that I was able to kind of take a step back and really have that focus and lock in on that part of my career. And then it's brought me to here and, you know, staring at another great season or, you know, probably personally my best season I've had over here and, you know, a contract extension and yeah.
That's awesome, man. Hey, let's figure out how you got there, man. I love the fact that, because you know this is kind of all about your life. I love the fact that I finally found, not finally, there's a bunch of you guys out there, but I finally found someone that was more like me when I was a kid that's like, man, I just played everything. I mean, just give me a ball and I played it. It didn't matter what it was, except for soccer. I wasn't much of a soccer fan, but tennis, volleyball, baseball, basketball, football, it didn't matter. I played everything. And I felt like that's what made me a better player on the basketball court. I found, you know, I wanted to play baseball professionally, but between, you know, I was drafted to play out of high school, but then, you know, I didn't have any scholarship offers. My dad made me go play basketball so I could study, which mm-hmm. is probably the best move that I've ever made. But it's like you just kind of found your way through other sports, and I got a feeling that like a lot of what you represent on the court has so many other sports involved in it, like football, like soccer, like everything, because you just have a different sense of the game. I think that's how I look at it anyway. That's how it felt for me.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of the intangible qualities about myself came from doing other things, and I think I tell people this all the time. Like, you know, in high school, I was 6'3". You know, not really big and strong, not really athletic. I was just a guy who loved to play sports. And in American football, football was my go-to sport at the time. Like I was quarterback of the team. You know, I had a real future in that. And, right. You know, coaches telling me like, hey, this is your future. This is your future. And, you know, colleges telling me, hey, this is your future. And I did not like playing football as much as I love playing basketball. And, you know, for playing quarterback in football, it was play a series, you'd score, and then you'd go sit for 20, 25 minutes right. until you got the ball right. back. And they're like, basketball just had like that continuity and that, you know, like constant action. And I loved it. And I just, you know, I didn't see myself not playing basketball. And thankfully, that summer between, you know, when I was 15, 16 years old, I grew 3 inches, got to about 6'6". Got a little bit faster, got a little bit stronger. Basketball started becoming easier for me. And, you know, I got good enough to earn a scholarship to play basketball, you know, at Valparaiso. And if that had not happened, had I not grown or had I not formed into, you know, a little bit more of an athlete with basketball, I would have, you know, stuck with American football and maybe learned to like it. And my path would totally be different. But
and yeah, maybe here we are. I wouldn't be doing this interview. You'd be like Patrick Mahomes right now.
Like to think, sometimes I'll sit around, we'll watch football on Sundays, like me and Thomas Walkup, you know, George Pappas, and we'll sit around, watch football on Sundays, and they'll look at me, could have been you. And we make that joke all the time, but who knows.
I know you spoke often about your parents being a big part of everything, but with your whole family, you know, take, obviously it's the same thing with me. They take you to the games, they take you to here, they take you there. It's, you know, I coach kids now, and sometimes it's so crazy to see, because we didn't have all that access to Uber and the taxis, you know, by phone and whatever. But I see kids being picked up all the time by, you know, Ubers and stuff like that when I get them out of practice. Having your parents there, did they, number one, obviously, I know they helped you, you know, guide you through your career and help you, you know, not so only make that decision, but bring you to where you are today, but also the support that they gave you when you chose basketball over football. What was that feeling to have that support as you know, I'm sure you have the rest with the rest of your family also.
Yeah. Listen, I'm incredibly fortunate and blessed to have two parents that like they, from day one, were all about, what are you interested? You know, how can we help you? My dad wasn't a basketball guy, but when he found out that basketball was what I wanted to do, it was my path. He studied, watched every tape, read every book. He became my coach and coached me until I was 18 years old and left for college. And, you know, he was all about his kids all the time. And I was, you know, incredibly lucky to have them. And, you know, going back to when I had to kind of make that decision, and when I, you know, they immediately pushed back on it because they were all about like, hey, finish what you started. You know, I started playing football, like finish it out,
right.
Like see it through. Like, don't just give up on it, you know, so easily. So they made me, you know, do a few more things even after I'd already kind of made up in my mind I didn't want to play football anymore. And they could just see, you know, as they came and they would watch, you know, watch me do some summer camps and a few things with football. They're like, yeah, you just don't. You're not there. You're mentally, you're messing up because you just don't love it anymore. Your joy's not there. And ultimately, you know, and I'm from a small town too. So you can imagine when one guy, you know, where football, basketball, it's king there. So like when one guy doesn't want to do something or leave, you know, it's because it's big news. It's a big deal. And so we had to deal with that a little bit of disappointment, not only from, you know, people around, but, you know, friends, family, but they just went full steam ahead. You know, anything that we wanted to do as kids is you know, they learned as much as they possibly could so that they could also be involved in it. And yeah, it's for all of us, you know, my older brother and two younger sisters.
I think the smartest move they made was take you out of football if you weren't actually 100% focused, because that's not the sport you want to play if you're not.
No, not at all. I mean, they were seeing me drop back, throw passes in the dirt, just like they weren't even. They were like, okay, we get it now, we understand. Yeah, you don't want to do this anymore.
You don't have to show us anymore.
Yeah, it would save your head a little bit from getting knocked around.
You had an incredible college career, man. 2,348 points. I mean, all kinds of numbers at Velpo. You got hurt in the last year. How bad did that? I mean,
man, that sucked.
That's always the hardest time. It's probably the first time you've ever been injured, also, right? I'm assuming.
First time, and that was like heartbreaking, man. I was dealing with like, and up to that point, like if you had never dealt with injury really like that, you don't know what it is. So like about January of my senior year, I started like just having this discomfort in my foot. And when you're at a mid-major school, sometimes you can get away with being the bigger, badder dude and just like powering through it. And, you know, the competition isn't like high major college, so you're not having to keep up with bigger athletic guys. So I was just able to kind of power through for a month or so. And then once it just kept getting worse and that treatment wasn't getting any better, it was like after my senior night, last home game at Valpo, I went and got like, you know, the test done. And the funny thing about it was the next day, the trainer that we had at the time was so scared to tell me that, you know, I had a stress fracture in my foot. He didn't say a word to me. He took me to the doctor's office, 20 minutes in the car, did not say a word to me. And I'm like, you know, the whole time, like, hey man, like, you know, you tell me the doctor hasn't called you and told you what's up. So we get to the doctor's office and obviously immediate shutdown, emotional, just like wreck about not being able to play and help our team make a tournament run, which we were very capable of doing my senior year, and
right.
Having to shut it down because, you know, for the future, if I would have kept going, it would have probably led into my first year as a pro.
Yeah, well, sometimes you got to listen to the doctors, man, even though it's difficult. Yeah.
I know. That sucked, man. That sucked, especially when you invest that much in a place for 4 years and
right.
You have all these dreams and aspirations and the guys you were doing it with, and to just leave it just a little bit short was, yeah, that it's gut-wrenching, man.
I always talk about how hard the last game is as a player, you know, that last, mm-hmm. whether you win or lose, it doesn't matter. It's your last go around in your 4 years of college. You can never go back again. It's finality is what it is. And to have it cut short because of injury, I mean, it's not the best scenario either. But, you know, that's what this game is all about, though.
No, and you know, fortunately, I was still able to get picked in the draft and go to a place that they helped handle my rehab. Phoenix, you know, the trainers and doctors right. there helped handle my rehab from the foot surgery and got me ready to go for the beginning of the next season.
You spent most of your time at Phoenix in the G League after the draft. What was your experience like there? I mean, what's the positive you take out? What's the negative? What were your overall feelings about that experience? I'm sure there's all kinds of emotions.
Not a lot of positive, I'm going to be honest, man.
I had to ask anyways.
Yeah, not a lot. We were the worst team in the league. We didn't win a game in January that year. Every time I did get a chance to play, it was, you know, either you're up 30, you're down 30, or 30 seconds left in the game. And, you know, part of me got into there, you know, expecting this and that. And when you get hit in the face with, you know, it's not like that. Like, hey, there's an agenda. You know, the team, the front office, like there's an agenda there. It's not about, you know, how well you do in training camp, in practice, in the G League when they send you there. Like it's not about that. It's
business.
You know what? Yeah, it's what's on their mind. And the quicker I wrap my head around that and the perspective I got on that, mentally I was a little bit better. But during the year, I just remember, you know, talk to my family, my parents, and, you know, they would just be like, man, you're not the same happy, you know, happy to be here playing basketball, right. Enjoying it. It turned into, you know, just being okay with losing is really what it felt like. And because we were doing it so much and just the atmosphere was something not to not be desired. And I knew that, you know, it wasn't for me. Had I had gotten another chance, maybe I would have stuck it out, try and stick it out somewhere else and go somewhere else. But, you know, I had an offer from the best team in Europe on the table, and, you know, it was kind of stupid
but
not to take it.
Before that, you go from like 4 years at Valparaiso, which, I mean, the team was just one of those teams, you know, the Butlers, the, you know, the, all those surprise teams that come up and have great runs. You have four incredible years there, even though it gets cut short. Now all of a sudden you move on into your dream of being drafted in the NBA. Everything's just like totally the other extreme. It's so hard for players to get through that mental. I mean, physically you get through it because you're practicing every day, you're working, but mentally, you know, when you're home alone, that's the hard part.
Yeah, you see all the great things about it, right? You see the way you travel, you know, the hotels you're staying in, like the amenities to you, like, you know what I mean? Like, you see all that, and like that, like, kind of disguises it for a while, right? Like, that disguises the losing, or like the things aren't going that well. You're not playing, like, you know, because you're just loving life, right? And some guys, I think, get caught up too much in loving that life that they stop loving basketball, and they stop, you know, understanding why it is that you're there. And for me, after I looked past all of that, it was like, man, like I'm not loving basketball right now. Like, I need to be, where can I be back, you know, fully engaged and involved in the game? And unfortunately that year it was tough. It was tough to find that.
I said, it's a lot easier to get used to a 5-star hotel than it is to losing every night.
Man, I'm not even, man, some of the stuff from the NBA was like, you know, you would drop your bag off and you wouldn't see that bag until it was in your hotel room when you landed wherever you were going. Like, it just, like, some things I'm like, man, this is not real life. Like, this is just not real life. And I understand why guys want to play till they're 38, 40 years old. Cause it's like, why would you ever want to give this up? You know, this is as good as it can get.
Yeah, the post isn't the best ever, but, you know, you don't need to worry about that just now. So how the hell, for lack of a better word, how does Dimitris Itoudis find you, who's my boy, by the way, and all of a sudden you're on CSKA Moscow? Like, I remember doing, like, the first time I did a game of yours, I think it was actually the first, you might have played Real Madrid that season, the first game, I'm not sure. But it was right in the beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking through the list. I'm like, who the F is this guy? Where'd he come from?
Man, I ask myself that question too. I don't, man. And that's just like, I will always have such a special, you know, a special thing for Coach Itoudis because he gave me that first opportunity. I was playing summer league with Phoenix that summer, summer 2018. And I was getting calls from him in my Vegas hotel room, you know, during summer league. And he's like, hey, look, like, you know, this is what it is over here right now. You know, you're in the situation you're in. I have a better situation for you. My agent's telling me, you know, what about it? And I had watched your league. I'd followed your league in college a little bit just because, you know, I wanted to play professional basketball. It didn't matter where. I just wanted to play. So I had kind of a preconceived knowledge of your league and all that stuff. So it wasn't like foreign to me, but when it finally, you know, hit me over the head, it's like, okay, this isn't just an offer from, you know, a EuroLeague team that's, you know, been fighting for playoff spots. Like, this is CSKA. This is a team that's winning right now, that has the roster that, you know, nobody can compete with. Like, and all they need is you. Like, and Coach Itoudis was like, you know, we just need someone like you. That's it. And my agent kind of had to hit me over the head a little bit. He's like, hey, dude, you're an idiot if you pass on this. Because no one gets this kind of thing. And you know, most guys have to come and they have to start out first division somewhere else, build their career up. And, man, I was, blessed by Coach Itoudis to have an opportunity of a lifetime to come in right away.
I mean, he's one of those guys that recognizes talent also. And I think that, like, you know, like your agent probably said, or what you probably thought is, man, you know, you guys don't get that opportunity. You know, your Will Clyburn, for example, who comes from, you know, a second division team in Turkey, then gets an opportunity with Darussafaka, then gets, you know, and just kind of climbs up that ladder and jumping right in without being an NBA star or a big time player is not normal. But and not only that, is you get to win the damn EuroLeague your first year. That, I mean, you know that sucks for so many players.
Dude, and like, this was so funny about it and kind of bad about it at the same time. Like, how naive I was to, like, this whole thing. I didn't have any family there for the Final Four. Like, I had a friend there, and that was it. Because I just didn't know. I was like, I didn't know, like, how, like, I knew it was, everybody talked about it, it's special, it's the biggest competition, it's the most exciting for the whole year, like, this is it, this decides the best team. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, I just like approached it as like we were going to play another road game, and I didn't have family travel with. But then like once we won and I saw the celebration and I saw like, it just like, I'm like, yeah, like, damn it. Like, why? It'd be awesome to have, you know, my girlfriend here right now, or like my mom and my dad. Like, you know, I really messed this up. And so like I'm waiting for the day that we win it again and I can have everybody there. And, you know, I thought last year was going to be that moment, but I can have everybody there, my wife, my daughter now, family, and it can just be, I can make up for not being able to celebrate it that first time.
You'd be what, one of those guys just bringing your daughter down and putting them on your shoulders.
I can't wait.
You know, I swear to you, I'm the guy that started that, because I did that in 95 with the guy who interviews you before and after the game. And I had him down there. I think I was one of the first ones to bring him down. And now everybody does it. I love it. I think it's a special moment. Hopefully, you'll get there again.
Love that, Trent. I mean, thank God you started that, because it is. It's those are the moments, man.
I don't know if I did or not, but I'm claiming it.
Yeah, claim it, man. Claim it. You know, was there cameras back then? No social media or anything like that. Nobody can tell you otherwise.
I was going to say, yeah, there were cameras. And they were colored, too. They weren't black and white. I'm not that old.
Didn't get you there.
You played 7 minutes in the final game. You played 13 and a half in a semifinal game over Madrid. So I'm kind of leading up into last year a little bit, but I mean, you had a good season, and you had a good Final Four. I mean, it's your first damn year. You know how many people fight to get it? You know, I mean, people, just like an NBA championship, Charles Barkley, John Stockton, and of course, those are all the Michael Jordan eras. But you know, to get a big trophy like that your first year, even though I know you guys won the VTB league that year also, but I mean, it's and plus you're participating, it's not like you're just, you know, you were just there, you know, I mean,
yeah, it's like an addiction, man. Like, it's just you got me started on an addiction early, because once I tasted that, it was like, you know, okay, next year, like, how can I get it again? You know, at FS, like, it was 100% heading that way too before the COVID thing happened and the season style. Like, nobody was touching us. You know, Shane was having the most unbelievable season you could have had at that point. Like, it was a freight train coming through. And I was thinking, like, okay, back to back, you know, how many guys have done that in their first two? I know Kyle Hines did it when he was at Olympiacos, but like, how many guys have done that?
How many teams is even, I mean, it's only happened three times, you know?
That sucked when the season got cut and couldn't get that chance again. But
the interesting part of that is y'all beat Efes in the finals to win that championship.
Yeah.
And then did he do this and the club let you go, or did you get an offer from Efes?
No, I think that summer kind of all started when Nando DiColo, I think, decided that he wasn't going to stay with Cheska. And I think there was just at that point after winning, I don't know if there was, and again, I'm speculating here, but maybe they just decided like, okay, hey, we've done it with this group for a few years now. Like, we need to change a few things around. You know, Nando's been here forever. Like, he's not going to be here anymore. You know, let's start to think about changing some things here and there. And, you know, for whatever reason, I didn't take anything personal with it. I understood that, you know, hey, this is the business side of it. You know, some guys are fortunate to stay in places for multiple years. And for me, I won the championship. You know, could I have helped myself maybe a little bit better here and there? For sure. But it's my first year. I didn't really like place too much expectation on myself. But yeah, it was, you know, in the summer, Coach Atutis called me and said, hey, the team was just moving in a different direction. And I was just thankful that I had another EuroLeague job that I could, you know, fall into place and more or less carry on with the career.
I think one of the most justified European championships ever was Efes winning after the COVID year. And I know, I know you weren't a part of that. You were a part of the foundation, so to speak, let's say, though, because that COVID year was absolutely amazing. I mean, it was the way you guys were playing, you already mentioned it. It was just, you're steamrolling teams. And, you know, we all know that, you know, I guess the case would be Real Madrid this year, that not the team that dominates throughout the year is not the team that always wins.
No, it's not.
But Efes the second year after you left, unfortunately for you, won that title again. And I mean, how good of a feeling was that for you, knowing that you were part of that? I mean, either way, you're part of it.
Yeah, and it felt good. The only thing that felt good about it was when, you know, those guys would text me. Those guys would text me afterwards and be like, hey, like, you know, we know you're not here right now, but it's, you know, we still want to, you know, give you your, give you your flowers, so to speak, for being
here. That's awesome, dude. What you just said is like the coolest thing ever, because that's what this game's all about. Not about the fame, not about the money, not about making a last second shot. It's about having your peers texting you, man, when you missed out on something that you should have been there for. You just gave me the chills, dude. I mean, that's awesome.
Brian Dunson, one of the best teammates I could ever ask for, man. Like, I still have a great relationship with him today. And just to hear from him, you know, after they had won that first year, like, you know, he, you know, because I was a little down about it. You know, I did feel some certain type of way. I wanted to be there. I wanted to be a part of it.
And,
you know, it did suck a little bit having to see them celebrated. And, you know, just to hear from him and hear from the guys afterwards about whatever, it just was, it made me a little bit better. Maybe pick my spirits.
I mean, come on. You're not a legit athlete if that doesn't bother you a little bit.
I mean, even the year after when they won again, I just, you know, it still bothered me.
Right.
Still bothered me. But, that's what it's about, though, man. It's how can you get yourself in that situation to give yourself a chance to do it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, being in the right place at the right time. It happened to you the year before that, unfortunately, and then happened for you again. And you went, during that time, the double championship by Evis, you're in Baskonia. And you already mentioned Ivanovic today. Look at it. I played with Selko. I played with a lot of guys. And man, they're hard to play for on a daily basis, man. They know how to get into your head. They know how to get into your mind. They know how to get into your physical capabilities. But at the end of the day, somehow or another, it makes you a better player. And I think you've already kind of mentioned that before. Tell me about what it was like playing for him and that team, because, you know, that team is one of the teams that's known almost to develop talent for the rest of the EuroLeague. Sometimes they're bringing these new guys and they develop them. And sometimes, you know, they win, sometimes they don't. But tell me what it was like to play for that team and play for Dusko.
I'll say this, man. I know a lot of people have a lot of, you can go here and there, the spectrum on people, what people have to say about Dusko. And, I will always say that what he did for me set me up for the rest of my career in EuroLeague. I mean, the opportunity he gave me, he helped me find a lot of things about myself through the difficulties in training camp, through all that, like, that have stuck with me today. Like, I didn't know until I, you know, the first couple of weeks playing for him, when he was telling me, like, hey, you need to lose weight. And I was like, coach, what are you talking about, coach? Like, I feel like I'm in good shape. Like,
I'm in shape.
I've played, you know. He's like, no, like, you know, 2 kilos more. You need to lose 2 kilos more. And I'm like, okay, like, I guess I'll, you know. And then I did it after a few weeks, and I've been playing at that weight. I make sure I stay at that same weight, you know, for the last 3 years, because I did. I started getting faster. I started, you know, from what I already was, I'm not saying I'm the fastest guy in the world, but like, I felt that there was another gear I could get to, another shape that I could get in. He showed me what it meant to really be in shape to play the game of basketball the way that, you know, I could potentially play it. And, you know, I give him all the credit in the world for that, because, you know, who knows how many years it would have taken before I discovered that, about myself.
Or if you would have discovered it.
Yeah, or if. And, you know, he'll put you through the ringer, man. Like, you know, you'll be running outside, you know, practice twice a day, sometimes without the ball. Like, you know, guys, you know, all the stories and stuff, you know, that guys share about it. Like, it's not easy. But, you know, when you get into that game and you, you know, start playing and you start realizing, like, okay, like, the way this guy is coaching the game of basketball and he's coaching us to play, like, it's going to give us a chance, and it's given me opportunity to be the best I can be. And I'm very thankful for him giving me that opportunity.
And I remember when Obradovic showed up to Madrid when I was playing there, and I was, you know, I was at what I thought was the top of my game, you know, because I was like, man, I'm, you know, people telling me I'm like one of the best in Europe, blah, 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 so on and so on. And he just walks in and is like, I'm going to make you a better player. And you know,
isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing how, like, somebody else can see that.
But it's kind of confrontational to start with. Mm-hmm. It was like, his first question was like, you think you're good? I'm like, well, I've always thought I was good, but now people tell me I'm good. That's different.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I'm going to make you better. And your first thing in your mind is like, hey, fuck you. You're not going to make me any better. I'm already here.
No. Right. Like, and it's amazing, man. Like, how other people can see that. Like, you know, how did you feel when somebody, like, knowing somebody else could see that in you.
Right.
But you didn't see it in yourself. And you thought like, man, I'm where I'm at. Like, this is me, you know, take it or leave it. But it's like when somebody steps in and tells you like, no, there's more you can get out of yourself, more you can get out of yourself. And once you do get that more out of yourself, it's like, you look back and like, oh, okay. Yeah. Thanks, coach.
But isn't there a point where you look back, you're like, damn, man, I wish someone would have told me this 3 years ago. I'd be somewhere else right now.
And coach, we go back to Coach Atudis. He was the one that truly gave me my, like, you know, trajectory as a player. Before that, it was like, you know, hey, you're a four man. You spot up, you make shots, you rebound, you know, try and be tough on defense, be tough on the glass. And he helped me realize like, hey man, like, you can get this extra dimension. You can be this mobile perimeter guy who can attack closeouts, who can come off screens and shoot, who can push the ball in transition, who can play, you know, post up. Like, you know, you have that ability and this is what you can get to. It's just, you know, it's going to take time. It's going to take opportunity, but don't limit yourself to just, you know, what you're doing for our team right now. And, you know, when he showed that to me or explained that to me, having a coach like him that won championships and is well-respected and, you know, him having that honesty with me, it really pushed me forward to add that new dimension to my game.
So you go from a guy that in Dusko that kind of gets more out of you than even you ever knew you had or expected, and you head to Coach Bartzokas in Olympiacos, and you get there, and of course, do you kind of realize when you sign the contract that you're going to be kind of like second fiddle to Sasha? There were some rumors that he was maybe going to the NBA, but then he didn't, then he stayed. And how did that feel for you? Because as your game's picking up, you go to a place that's kind of going to sit you back down again.
Yeah, and, you know, initially, you know, in my mind, it wasn't going to be like that. It was, you know, the vision was, you know, talking to coach and stuff before coming to Olympiacos was, hey, you know, you and Sasha, I see a lot of opportunity of you guys to play together. Right. And I had always, you know, thought of myself as being able to not just play the four, but play the three as well. And you know, in certain situations, in certain minutes, you know, I was getting a lot better on the perimeter. I was getting a lot better defensively. You know, I just felt that, you know, there was more that I could do more than just being a four man. And, you know, coach agreed with me and, you know, that kind of sold me. It's like, okay, here's an opportunity to not only join a good team and play a little role, but I can, you know, swing both positions. I could play with Sasha as well. And, you know, during the season, obviously coaches have tough jobs, man. I'm not going to sit here and say that, you know, we hindsight's always 20/20. We can always look back and say, hey coach, you should have done this. You should have done that with me, whatever. So I'm not going to, you know, sit here and blame coach for, you know, not going to it as much. Would I have liked to have had more opportunity in that first year, but you know, Sasha was having the season he was having. Our team was rolling. We were the best team all year. And, you know, there were some games where I could step in and have a big impact and other games where I didn't. And I never lost my trust in my routine and making sure that my game still stayed well-rounded. You know, I never lost, you know, that the faith in what I could do. And in the moments that I could do it, I made sure that I, you know, didn't fall back on just being a guy that just stood out there and let things happen. So it, you know, in one way or another, it was good for me to kind of just take a step back and, you know, continue to keep working and hopefully one day it would pay off.
You kind of had, in my research and the stuff that these guys at IMG send me all the time, they always take care of me with a lot of my work. And you had kind of a similar situation that I had in Baskonia, that one day I got a phone call saying that I wasn't coming back. And man, it's something that to this day I talk about a lot. Yeah, I'm close with everybody in Baskonia. Jose and I, you know, every time I see him, give him a hug because I thank him for, you know, I always thank him for the opportunity he gave me. But it was a strange goodbye. You know, it was like, And I spread your quotes, and I'm like, man, it sounds like the same thing happened to you. What exactly happened? I mean, because it sounds like you kind of wanted to stay, like I did.
Yeah, I was full in on staying, man. I was, you know, 10 toes dug in, man. I believed in what we were doing there.
Great city, Great city.
I really thought it was a place that if you just gave it, you know, gave it the time and really like kept a core of guys, like you could, you know, we could do something. And I felt like it was heading in that direction. But yeah, it all started, I think, when I had to, get knee surgery that second year. Mm-hmm. Had to go through that whole process. And, you know, part of that situation, I regret a little bit because there was a lot of like in between time of when I got hurt to then, you know, trying to, you know, is it going to get better on its own? You know, the song and dance everybody does sometimes with, you know, can we get this right without having to have surgery? And eventually I had to get surgery and we wasted a little bit of time to get to that point. And then here we go. I missed half a season. And by that time, you know, Coach Ivanovic got let go, you know, Nevin Spahia got hired and we finished the season out. And I still felt like I had a really good second half of that season. But all the while there was a little passport situation going on that fell through for me. And because of the knee surgery, I wasn't able to play in the windows, wasn't able to get the passport. And I think because of all of this, you know, make a long story short, some of this stuff, you know, didn't go my way. And eventually it was like, okay, hey, I know you're under contract for the next year, but if you have somewhere else that you can go, we'll kind of just let this all be what it is. And we'll let you go. And that hurt. It did hurt because I did believe in the place and what we were doing. And I wanted to stay. I was, you know, fully expecting on staying. I didn't move any of my stuff home. My stuff was still stuck in Vitoria. And, but you know, things happen for a reason. And I was able to pick up and go somewhere that now I love and could never imagine leaving.
Yeah, we got a lot in common in that. Everything you told me, I've already lived it.
Isn't it amazing, man, how these just like it's just
the cycles, man. They just keep just coming around cycle. And around.
Yeah.
Dude, the year before, that year you're in Baskonia, the year before you show up to Olympiacos, they get their heart just destroyed by Misic. Mm-hmm. In the semifinal game and on that 3-point on the buzzer, and then you come into town, and I hate to do this, man, but I have to. It's the crossover. We do have to talk about last year's Final Four. Your season was a decent season, like you said before. You were kind of in and out, not up to your expectations, what you expected from coach and from the team at that point. But you averaged about 10 minutes a game in the playoff against Fenner. The most you played in that playoff series was the third game. I think that was when Lucas hit the incredible three on the buzzer. And you get to the Final Four. You don't play much. It was 4.5 minutes, I think, in the semi, zero in the final. And you watch Sergio just knock down that only 2 points of the Final Four for him. Dude, I know you can't just sum it up because there's too many emotions, too many feelings, but you know, as much as you can talk about the victory, I need you to talk about that heartbreaking loss too, man. It's got to be so hard.
Yeah, and I'm not shy about it, man. That I felt like that was, you know, a huge, huge like backbreaker, you know, moment for me. To come to that point, having been to a Final Four before, having won a championship before, having, you know, experience in that environment to then, you know, get a goose egg in the playing time in the championship game. You know, it made me feel a certain type of way.
Right.
You know, and it's still, you know, when it gets, you know, brought up or when people want to talk about it, like, yeah, it brings up that anger still and that embarrassment, you know, having lost the game. You know, you win the game and then it's like, okay, whatever. You know, we won the game. Right. All the emotion and everything from it, but when you lose the game, and you lose the way we lost, everything gets overanalyzed. Everything starts to get broken down more. And yeah, I felt you know super angry about not getting the opportunity or not you know being able to help the team in that championship game, especially when Madrid goes zone late in the game. And here I am with this unwavering belief that I'm the best shooter that you're gonna find. In that situation.
And dude, Madrid got through those five games of Partizan because of the zone. and they beat Barcelona because of the zone in the fight. So, I mean, to me, yeah. I mean, I'm not trying to knock on Coach Barsokas. I think he's a great coach.
And me either. Yeah, Coach, you know, he's a very realistic guy. He knows I'm angry about it. He for sure, you know, he's got that kind of feel with his players. Like, of course, he's not going to make everybody happy, but, you know, he knows that, you know, Alec Peters is going to be pissed for not playing any minutes.
Yeah, but I think Coach is the way that I know him anyways is he's the kind of guy to sit back and probably say, like, damn it, I should have freaking played it. You know what I mean? That's my bad too. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we could play, you know, coaches, like we said earlier, they have a tough job and they could play what if, you know, all year long. And like, if Yule doesn't make that shot, nobody says anything, but, you know, he did. And, you know, yeah, I was angry watching Madrid go zone and us not, you know, them just clawing back slowly into that game and sitting there thinking like, hey, coach, like, you know, if they're playing zone, it's nice to have some shooting out there. And, you know, even if it's for a few minutes, man, I can help. Like, I can, you know, I can provide something. And, you know, it didn't work out that way. The game didn't work out our way. It was gut wrenching, man, to walk away from Kaunas and fly back home and having to relive that a little bit. And I mean, to be honest, man, that anger towards that has carried me a little bit through the summer, through this year, that, you know, more or less chip on my shoulder of like, hey, if we get in that situation again, you know, I don't want any doubt in anybody's mind of who needs to be on that floor. And, you know, hopefully we do get in that situation again.
Dude, you give me the chills when you talk about it, because that's exactly what I was, you know, when I was doing all the research and the interviews. You know, I realized that you were just kind of like this player. Like I said, I expected more of you in the time that you've been in Europe. I expect, maybe not what you're doing now. I didn't expect all this because you're killing it right now. But I expected a more consistency, you know, probably the typical guy that maybe spends 3 years on one team, goes to another team for 3-4 years. It doesn't skip around to 4 or 5 teams. But this season, man, I mean, that shot by Jewel over the outstretched hands of Fall, I mean, if I could still see it, I know you could still see it.
Don't close your eyes. Don't close your eyes for too long, man, because it'll work its way in your memory, I'm sure.
Man, look, I'll tell you, I've been retired for 24 years, all right? I think I retired in 2000. And I still close my eyes at night and have visions of losing to Barcelona in the final of the ACB championship, about losing to them in the semifinals. I mean, so the things you're going to bring with you, unfortunately, as years go on, is that shot and those freaking moments.
I was really hoping you were going to tell me, like, hey, it gets better. You know,
No, it gets harder, man. It gets harder because I'm 58 and I still see games where I'm like, damn it, if I could just go back and play that one more time, you know?
Do you, when you do your commentary for the games and stuff, do you see moments in games that remind you of moments that you were playing? You're like, man, like that shot reminds me of the shot that one guy hit on me when, you know, so-and-so was playing. Everything. I'm sure you have those moments, yeah.
Everything. It's just like, they're all like these mirages, man, where you just see them pop up over and over again. But, you know, the hardest part about commentating games is not being over-analytical, you know, because the game's so much different from when I played. And a lot of aspects of it are incredibly more visual and more beautiful. Other aspects, yeah, I got my questions about, you know. So, I mean, you're a Valpo guy. You guys played a system type of offense, you know, when you guys played. So it's a different type of game, but I love it nonetheless. But you can never get those days out of your mind, man. They don't go away. They don't go away. And the bad days stick with you more than the good days do. That's the bad part. But hey, let's talk about your freaking good days, dude, because you are going off right now. You only started 3 damn games last season. You've started every game so far this season, and your numbers are just, I mean, you're almost tripling your overall average. So I feel like I know what I'm talking about when I see a player 5-6 years ago walk in the yard and go, damn, this dude could play, man. He needs some more run. It's just taking you a long time to prove me right.
I'm glad I did.
I'm
glad I did because, I think, you know, being in the same place for another year also helps with that. You're able to get comfortable. Routine kind of stays the same. Coaches, you know, familiarity is there. But, yeah, just, you know, when Sasha left this summer, you know, this was – something that I think everybody was waiting on pins and needles for. You know, is he going to leave? You know, what's going on? And, right. you know, to him get that opportunity, he took it. And I think everybody was left with a question mark over their head, like, hey, what's Olympiakos going to do? You know, it's Lucas leaves, Sasha leaves, like, where do they go from here? And silently to myself, I'm like, you know, wanting to throw my phone against the wall. Like, hey, what do you mean? Where are they like, you know, they don't got to go anywhere else. Like, hey, like, I'm right here. And so, I mean, I got to work. You know, I was really hoping that the team didn't go out and, you know, sign, you know, Mirotić or, you know, sign those, get one of those guys that was up for be a free agent, because I really wanted the opportunity.
Right.
And, you know,
how about when they signed Iggy? Like right before the season started, did that kind of like throw a little question in your mind? My boy Brad Dinkins is cool as shit. I know you guys probably get along really well.
He's the best, man. I
love him.
I'm sick and tired of him talking about Michigan, and because he went there for a year, and he's like, I'm this Michigan man. Our football team won the national championship this year, man.
No, he doesn't.
No, he's the best. He's the best.
But when they signed him, my question was like, all right, he's a great player. I love the way he plays the game. I had just done a crossover with him too, so it was kind of cool. But I'm like, what are they signing him for? You know, because I felt like you were the guy.
Yeah, and I don't think, I mean, shoot, you know how it goes, man. Look at all the best teams in Europe, man. The more guys you can have, right. the more dudes you can have on your team, the better off you are. And
depth is key.
Yeah, and the team just saw, and this preseason this year was like just war of attrition for our team. You know, we were having guys coming back from national team, you know, guys, you know, battered and bruised from just, you know, the preseason, you know, guys unlucky getting a few injuries here and there. And I think that, you know, we needed someone like Iggy to step in and be there for us, because we started the season with such a, you know, just kind of not the team that we expected to have. And Iggy was like a breath of fresh air coming in for us. And man, I give such credit to him and to, you know, to Moses Wright, you know, Naz Mitrulong, these guys, Philip Petrusev, these guys that we signed midway through the year to just, you know, because Coach Barzokas and his system, it's not the easiest to just jump in and say, okay, yep, like let's play. You know, it's very much like chemistry based with each other, and, you know, the feel that we have with each other. And, you know, for those guys to step in and have a quick learning curve and, you know, really take it and run with it. You know, it's been amazing to have the depth we have this year and the guys we've added.
I don't know what your boy Moses took before that Panathinaikos game, man, but I want some whatever he was taking.
give me all of that, man. That was you know, you have a good game against Panathinaikos, you're playing for Olympiakos, you're etched in the,
you're God.
You're everything. So he has been such a, like, you know, talk about Iggy being a breath of fresh air. Moses has been such an awesome addition for our team. It just is his general, you know, attitude he has about himself, and you know, all, you know, the goodness that he brings to our locker room, and just the, you know, the young, a little bit naiveness that he has, but it's like a good thing, because, you know, if you don't know what you don't know, exactly. Sometimes that's the most freeing thing in your mind, and you can go out and you can just be you and be who you are. And thankfully, you know, a guy like Moses, he's super talented to go along with it.
This is, normally these crossovers are evergreen content, so I'm not supposed to talk. Well, I'm not supposed, I can do whatever I want. It's my show. But
yeah, do you?
I got to, exactly.
Do you?
I got to talk to you about where you're at now, all right? Because, I mean, this when this comes out in a week or two, obviously you're going to be in a different spot today than you are in 2 weeks, because you're two good games away from home court advantage. You're one bad game away from maybe even the playoff.
Right.
You know, you never know. So that, but what's the team like mentally? I mean, this has been a struggle this season compared to the last two seasons. So, I mean, to me, I don't want to like break any secrets, but Efes went through the same thing a couple of years ago, where they struggled all year long. Boom, it was good, it was bad, injuries, whatever, and then they showed up in the end and they won it again. And that's kind of like what you guys are kind of like flying under the radar, so to speak. How do you guys feel within the locker?
Yeah, the whole season, man, just been this roller coaster of, you know, having guys in, having guys out. you know, who is, you know, who's healthy, who's not. And, you know, that happened. Every team has their problems, right? And it just seemed like for us, it was such a reoccurring thing. And we never could truly find that consistent flow. And we did for some stretches of the year, right? Like we rattled off, you know, a few games,
right?
You know, during the February and March month here. And to have that going into the most important time of the year, it has us feeling really confident. I mean, I think for us, it's not about getting the home court. I think that if that happens, great. But in our minds, it's like, okay, can we be, you know, avoid the play-in? Everybody wants to avoid the play-in, right? Just that extra week and that extra tension of having to play yourselves into the playoff is just, everybody wants to avoid it. But
I mean, it's essentially a Final Four.
It's an added week to the year that you just, you know, if you can stay out of it, you get an extra week before you prepare for the playoff. So to us, it's about, you know, taking care of business these last two games, whatever position we fall in. We like our chances against anybody. It could be, you know, Barca, Monaco, Pana, you know, Madrid, but, you know, it doesn't matter to us. We're in that kind of a headspace right now as a team that, like, you know, we're starting to really feel like our best days are coming at the right moment.
We talked about this before we went on air, man. Panathinaikos, five more games. There's the possibility.
There is not another city you would want to be in. There is nowhere else in Europe that somebody would want to be in than seeing a Panathinaikos EuroLeague playoff series.
I got my ticket reserved just in case.
I joke about it, you know, too. I always make this joke, and I'd prefer that because I was telling you beforehand, yeah. I hate flying. Flying's worst. Puts me in my most anxious state. You know, everybody in my team makes fun of me because of it. They look over at me every time there's turbulence. Like, you know, I'm a mess when I fly. So not having to leave home is kind of like my preference. So if we do get matched up with Panda, I probably will be one of the few people that's like,
they're, you know, excited about it.
Maybe has a little bit excited about it, but the city will just be on fire if that happens. And what an atmosphere that would create.
Hey man, I love the tweet, I think it was, or the Instagram where your wife said that you popped the question, like, would you like to sit these views for the next 2 years? Dude, that was pretty sweet, man. That's got to make her,
yeah,
as a wife, as a new mother, extremely happy too, to be able to at least know that she's going to be settled down for a couple more years in the same place.
Yeah, and of all the places that we've lived, you know, she was with me in Moscow, she was with me in Turkey, and we got married, you know, while I was playing for Baskonia in Vitoria. So she's been all over the place with me, yeah. and to have her feel the comfort of home here in Athens, you know, comfortable enough to, you know, have our child here and, you know, to raise her, you know, there was no fighting about it whenever that opportunity was presented itself. She was, you know, she could have signed it faster than me. You know, she was, she's been my biggest supporter. You know, she's been the biggest fan of mine, and, yeah, I'm blessed to have the family that I have, the wife that I have. I mean, I really, really love this life that I get to live with her in one of the most beautiful places on earth.
They have to deal with a lot of shit, don't they?
Dude, it's so much shit.
After bad practices.
And sometimes I'll pile it on, too. You know, sometimes you pile it on, you don't even mean to. You know, like, and this is one thing, too, about having a kid. I don't know, you know, if you felt the same way, but everybody tells you, like, oh, you know, your bad days aren't so bad anymore when you have, you know, when you have the baby at home. Man, a month after Ava, my daughter, was born, we played Panna away in domestic league. We lost the game. I came home just as pissed as I had ever been. So I don't know what I don't know what everybody said about, oh, your kids make your days better when you know, you have bad moments or bad games. I'm like, man, I still came home just as angry as before. So
yeah, but
I'm
I'm
working on that still.
That little girl that know that you just lost the Panathinaikos, she's gonna cry if she needs to cry anyway. Yeah. She's gonna wake up at 3 a.m. if she needs to wake up.
If she could talk, I've won every game since she's been born. I've been telling her that every game we've played. I'd be like, oh, daddy won again. She doesn't know.
She doesn't need to know any better. Hey, before we go to the EuroLeague test, let me just let you talk about what you're doing with your basketball camp back home.
Yeah.
And the fam, I saw the picture, and it's on your tweet and on your Instagram. And,
yeah.
And it just looks like a whole big happy family all together, man, helping out kids and changing their lives a little bit. Talk to me about it.
Yeah, that's important to me. It is it's a 100% family thing. I don't go anywhere else for the help in organizing or putting on my basketball camp. It's 3 days in the summer back in my old high school, my old small town that I grew up in. Mm-hmm. It's a camp that is it's near and dear to my heart because everything that we all the proceeds, all the sponsorship, everything that we get from that camp goes towards a couple local charities in the area. One of them mainly being the foundation that's named after my old high school coach who died of brain cancer. This was actually a couple days after we had won the VTB championship in 2019 with Cheska, right before I was about to fly home for the summer to, you know, and he had been in bad shape and, you know, I thought I was maybe going to see him one more time, but he had a huge impact on my life. And, you know, he tragically, you know, died from brain cancer in 2019. And his foundation started, you know, because of that, and it helps to fight brain cancer, raise awareness from it. So everything that our camp is geared towards is towards giving back to things like that. And then a few other places as well, local charities, you know, whether it's feeding kids that don't have anywhere to go after school, you know, play things like that. And it's near and dear to my heart. And I don't, you know, I don't go anywhere else for help. And I want it that way. I want my family to be 100% involved in it, to work it. People from the area, from my high school, are the ones that work it and are involved in it. You know, that's what means the most to me. And every year it gets bigger and bigger. And, you know, this year we're expecting our biggest year yet.
Awesome, man. That's good shit. That's just giving back, man. Giving back, using that platform to give back. And
yeah,
you know, players are so much more conscious about that nowadays than we were, you know, because there weren't as many opportunities to do those type of things. And I love talking to you guys, like give back to the community, give back, like you said, to an old coach, because, you know, you look back out and think about the coaches and all the people, teachers that influenced your life, whether in a positive or a negative way. It all depends on how you used it, you know, for the yeah. outcome of where you're at today. It's good stuff, yeah. man, to give back.
Yeah, man, just it weighs on my heart, man, like having to see, you know, one of your mentors growing up go through something, yeah. you know, so tough, and, you know, making him feel like less of a god than what you thought of him. And yeah, to see him go through that, and, you know, it's the littlest thing I could do is to repay and try and do my effort and bring my effort to that foundation and through our camp. And I only wish we could do more. I mean, right. We all wish we could just, yeah. keep, you know, do more if we could. And, you know, maybe someday, you know, maybe we'll do a second one in the summer. But for now, I'm, you know, extremely, extremely happy and blessed to be able to be a part of that.
That's a special memory you have every year when you go back home too. That's the coolest part, you know?
Yeah, you're a big man on campus, man. I walk in there and I look over at my wife every time. I'm like, hey, I used to kill it here. I used to kill it here. You would have loved to see me.
Hey, that's another thing that doesn't change. I still say that shit. I'm 58.
Yeah, hey. We always have that, right? We always have that.
I walk into the stadium where you play right now like, yeah, I used to kill these guys when I came here.
The crossover test.
Hey, man, it's EuroLeague test time. I know you're pretty astute on a lot of things. I saw, like, in the research that you always want to be, like, in tune with. You want to know who's in the room. You want to know what's going on. You want to be prepared for everything. So I hope you're prepared for this test. I don't know
what kind of preparation I could have done, but if there was preparation for this, I, you know, hopefully I've done enough.
I got five questions for you. Each one is worth ascending points, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50. They obviously get harder. I think they went pretty easy on you, to be honest with you. I think they went pretty easy on you.
You're setting expectations right now, thinking that if I live up to it, great. If I don't, you're gonna be able to blast me a little bit. So that's good.
I'll tell you what, the guys that I work with that do all this research and do like 50% or 80% of my work sometimes, they know who the leaders are. They tell me every show, and I always forget who the leaders are. But I think the leader has got 100 points, if I'm not mistaken. But I'm sure I'll get a text message here in a minute while we're starting. But you got a chance. You ready for question number one?
I'm ready. Give it to me.
This one is a tricky one. Let's see if you got it. How many Spanish teams are participating in the EuroLeague this year? And name them.
Wow, you said it was tricky. Yeah, Baskonia, Valencia, Real, and Barcelona.
Baskonia, Valencia, Real, Barcelona. There you go, you got it. You scared me for a minute.
All right, ten points. I'll take it. All not right, zero.
20 it's more not zero. Now. 20 more on the table. Who has the all-time scoring record in a single EuroLeague game?
It's Nigel Hayes-Davis, who just did it, last week?
I was going to talk about it during this interview, but I didn't want to because I knew the question was coming up, so I couldn't say anything about it. But, man, and you know, I'm going to – Pablo's going to get mad at me. Everybody's going to get mad at me. But, you know, I had 63 in one game, and they don't count that as a record because it was before the actual 2000 EuroLeague. But not – Nigel knows it. Shane knows it. I make sure.
Where's your credit, man?
I know. I make. Don't worry. I get my credit. I'll make sure they know it. Don't worry.
I'm gonna tell everybody that now. That brings it up. I'm gonna be like, nope, you're wrong.
Yeah.
I know who actually is number one.
Start spreading the rumor, baby. Start spreading the rumor. All right, number three. You got 30 points already. How many EuroLeague titles has Coach Bartsokas won as a coach?
Okay, Olympiakos won. Man, is that it? Is it one?
Is that your answer?
That's my answer.
You got it, man.
Yeah.
It was against Real Madrid. It was back to back from the previous year.
Yep.
There you go.
Yeah. All right. We're good.
So you're looking at 60 points right now.
We're rolling.
All right, I just got a message. The record's 110 points, and a few different players have it. But you are on a good track right now.
Okay.
This one's worth 40 points, which will take you to 100. So you got 60 points before they take you 100.
Yeah.
Which current player of the league has also played for Baskonia and Olympiakos?
Which current player?
A player in the league playing right now actively has also played for Baskonia and Olympiakos. Like you.
You're not going to give me the current team they're on either. That would give it away, huh?
Of course it would. Come on. Yeah, and then I have everybody else who did my crossover that pissed off at me.
Baskonia and Olympiakos. I'm probably making this harder than it needs to be. This sucks because, you know, in order to beat the 110, I got to get this right.
Yeah, exactly. He's got the numbers down and everything. You got it all figured out. You did do your pre-work.
Wade Baldwin.
Got it.
Wade Baldwin. Yeah, that's. I can't believe I didn't come up with that sooner.
100 points. There we go. We got the chance for the all-time record. No one has ever gotten all five questions right.
You guys are gonna throw something hard at me here.
No, the question's already set, man. We can't change it.
All right.
Who's the only player to have two triple doubles in EuroLeague history?
Is it Nick Kalaitis?
Damn.
No.
I thought we had the all-time winner when you said Nick too.
Did I? Oh no.
I
got it wrong.
That's a great guess though. That's what I would have probably said also, but it's Vucevic.
Yeah, Vucevic was my second guess, but I went too quick. All right, yep.
Dang. Yeah, you took so long on Baldwin. You should have taken your time on that one.
I know. I jumped the gun.
Gosh. 100 points,
my man. We can cut that. We can cut that and do a different question.
You
want
to do it again? I did. No. I did that one day in an interview where they made me shoot like over a minute to shoot or 30 seconds. I was like, dude, you need to cut that shit. I need to do it again.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing when they do bring you for like a little media thing? Like, all right, I need you to make a three. It's like, you missed seven in a row. It's like, all right, I look great. I look great right now.
Yeah. And the cameraman probably doesn't even know who you are.
Yeah, right.
Hey, listen, Alec, man, this has been absolutely amazing. I want to say, first of all, that thank you for being here and taking your time to be with me and with my listeners. But most importantly, you made me look good. That's the most important thing, man. When people make me look good, that's a good thing. I've been saying for years that this shit was going to happen to you and that you were going to be the man. And now you're becoming the man. And I love it. I love seeing it. I hope to see you in Berlin. That's the one place I want to see you. And I hope you step up and you're able to bring that Ava down and put her over your shoulders one more time for the first time and get down on that court, win that title, man. And best of luck to you. Thanks for everything, man. And just, thanks for being you, man. It's a lot of fun to have this interview with you.
Yeah, thank you, guys. I mean, I from here on out, believe me, I'm screaming to the world. You know, Joe R. Lucas, 63 points. You know, this we're gonna get you back on top, man. I'm campaigning the rest of the year, so it's the least I could do. Least I could do for you having me on here. Least I could do. So I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
I had some people in the EuroLeague post and the Nigel Davis thing of 50 points say something about that other record, but we ain't gonna talk about that. That was a long time ago, my man. That was 30 years ago, brother.
We're counting. I'm counting. I'm telling you. Anytime somebody brings it up, I'm nope.
Hey, man. I know. I'll tell you what, and we should talk about it real quick. It was ridiculous what he did. I mean, he only played 29 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, what talked about being, like, that's not even being in the zone. That's just being in a different planet than everybody else. Like, that's
He did that shit in 29 minutes. I texted him the other day, and I was just like, man, dude, that was just, I said, Nigel, it's a Saturday night and I'm literally in my house watching your 50 point game. That's how important it was to me to watch it and see it, man.
Yeah. I mean, you rewatch a game like that. Talk about you're involved in every single play. And it's like, first of all, the stamina he has to do it. And
that's
to be able to do it as efficiently as he did too, is just.
And at the end of the season. But the thing was, is like, you're sitting there watching the game and they pull him out with like 36. And I'm like, what the hell? I'm like, I've always said the same thing about Selko in my game. And I wrote this to Nigel. I said, man, look at, send Saras my love, man. Send him, give him a high five for me for putting you back in the game and letting you do that. Because I had a coach in Selko who let me do mine, and that's huge. Because you could have easily sat him down and said, man, we've won the game. We're up by 25. Sit down and be quiet, and then that 50 never shows up. So congratulations to the coach also.
Yeah, and I was on the court when Shane had his game against Munich at Efes, the 49 points.
And, oh, that's right.
In the fourth quarter there, Coach Ottoman took him out, he was close. But I think it was more just to give him I think it was getting to a point where he was forcing a little too much. And he needed just a little breather. But he took him out for like a minute and threw him back in there to let him finish it off.
I will say that my boy Nigel Hayes Davis was cherry picking in the end of that fourth quarter just a little bit.
You know, when you're feeling it, sometimes it's just some things take over and it leads you to be doing some things that
I love it, man. I can't be happy for him, man. He's a great guy and a hell of a 50's player.
50's 50, that's for sure.
Exactly. And it's such a round number, too. It's perfect. It even sounds better than 49.
Yeah, I know.
Hey, Alec, man, thanks again. I appreciate it. Took a lot more time wanted to with you, but like you said, you talk a lot, so.
Thank God you didn't ask me about PIR. I can go on a 100-page book rant about how I hate that stat. So that could save that for another time. So.
You know what I can't stand about that stat is it determines everything, which really determines
everything. And it's the most, it's the laziest box score, people who don't want to watch basketball type of statistic that you can find.
You know when I'm commentating games and they give me the MVP of the game. And it's always a guy that I'm like, come on, man. I mean, look at who just won the game in the fourth quarter. That's your player of the game.
there's so much accounted for there that just doesn't lead to real impact. There's been you're going to get me on this rant, but there's been games where the team with the most PIR added up doesn't win the game.
Doesn't win the game.
Why do you have a statistic for performance if you're supposedly have the best performance amongst your players, but you lose the game? I don't. Whoever made that stat up, I think needs to – go find a different sport to watch because it's lazy. It's just a lazy thing for people who don't want to watch the game can look at a box score and say who played well.
It's also the plus minus. Sometimes you look at you like, really, does that even add up or make sense? But anyways, it's all analytical now, my man. It's a whole different game.
That's right.
30 years from now, 30 years from now, when you're interviewing a guy that's just about to turn 29, you'll be saying the same thing. Like, you remember when we did the PIR?
Yeah, right.
Alec, man, thanks a lot, man. Congratulations to you and the family on your contract and your new state in Olympiacos. When I come into town, I'm going to hit you up.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you, Joe. Thank you, guys.
Thanks for listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. If you like what you've heard, subscribe now so you don't miss an episode and leave us a review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You can also get in touch via Twitter and Instagram at EuroLeague using the hashtag ELCrossover or on Facebook at the EuroLeague.